Dosenfischen.
The Podcast.
Out of the Between the Kitchens Studio.
Number
124B.
So it is.
Well, well, everybody. In and out Germany. We now proudly present.
A special interview.
Without special interest.
With the three magic guys.
The founders.
From Groundspeak. From USA.
Well, well. And this was the best impression of the English that we used in the interview. Easy to be understood, but not very perfect.
But they understood what you said.
I think they just answered. Ich glaube, die haben einfach gedacht, das wäre so Standardfragen, weißt du? Das ist jetzt. Die haben einfach. Ich glaube, das war denen egal.
Ja, wobei sie ja schon, das werdet ihr gleich hören, recht souverän mit den sprachlichen Defiziten umzugehen wussten, aber sich auch nicht haben lumpen lassen, das eine oder andere gucken zu lassen.
Allerdings, und dabei, also die haben ja deutsches Bier getrunken.
Ja.
Und ich habe noch gedacht, die haben jetzt, das war jetzt schon das zweite, habe ich so gedacht, Mensch, das ist ja ein bisschen stärker als es da drüben, heißt es immer, ob die das so gut abkönnen?
People.
Ja, aber sie konnten es, glaube ich, ganz gut ab. Um euch das Setting nochmal kurz vorzustellen, wir hatten uns Sobo und Frau Töse geborgt als diejenigen, die notfalls einspringen können, wenn unser Englisch am Ende ist. Mussten sie dann nicht, Gott sei Dank, aber die saßen sozusagen dabei und haben auf uns aufgepasst. Das Ganze in der Ecke eines urschwäbischen Restaurants.
Schlössle.
Genau, das Schlössle. Da gab es schwäbische Spezialitäten, zum Beispiel den Schwabenteller und Flädlesuppe.
Kann man auch nachlesen unter schlössle.com.
Genau. Aber die wussten ja gar nicht, wen sie da haben. Also
nee, sonst
haben
sie sich auch ein bisschen am Riemen gerissen. Ne?
Auch so schlecht waren sie nicht. Sie waren
aber nachher ein bisschen genervt. Aber da waren die drei schon weg.
Genau. Nee, also da jedenfalls haben wir in so einer klassisch ruhig ganz urigen Gasthausumgebung gesessen in der Ecke und haben, weil es natürlich Nebengeräusche gab, das Gerät nicht auf den Tisch gestellt, sondern immer hin und her gehalten. Darauf habe ich, also Regel Nummer 1 haben wir nicht berücksichtigt, nämlich die Interviewten müssen nebeneinander sitzen, damit man das Mikro schnell hin und her switchen kann.
Ja.
Sie saßen gegenüber, also einander gegenüber, sodass wir dann immer versucht haben, zu gucken, wer wird jetzt gleich das Wort ergreifen und dahin dann ganz schnell das Mikro. Ja.
Also die haben sich aber auch sehr charmant selber die Bälle zugespielt. Ne? Also das war schon, sie sind schon geübt, muss man so sagen.
Also stellte sich relativ schnell raus, dass Elias keinen Bock auf Interview hatte.
Nicht unbedingt, also man muss natürlich auch dazu sagen, die haben ein verdammt straffes Programm hinter sich die letzten Tage. Also das ist ja auch nur ein Kurztrip, die sind Mittwoch in Berlin gelandet, haben dann da so ein bisschen rumgecasht, sind dann irgendwann nach Ulm weiter. Das Gepäck war nicht da, das ist irgendwo verloren gegangen, das ist dann irgendwie erst Sonnabend gekommen. Sie mussten sich also mit irgendwie noch gekauften Sachen dann behelfen und der Tag war extrem lang und es war auch tatsächlich so, dass sie unmittelbar nach dem Gespräch dann in ihr Hotel sind, weil morgens relativ früh die Flieger wieder zurückging. Also die waren schon gut durch mit dem Thema und wir waren natürlich sehr froh, dass sie die Zeit noch hatten und uns da vor dem Mikro so Rede und Antwort standen.
Da wollen wir euch jetzt auch gar nicht länger auf die Folter spannen. Ran an die Buletten, rein ins Wirtshaus Schlössle. Und den Gründern gelauscht. Los geht's.
I understand the joke. It's like there's geocaches in your system.
But it's not fine. Yeah. No.
Something like,
yeah.
How was your day in Germany?
That was wonderful. I had a great time. This is probably the most unique location that I've been to for a geocaching event, and the amount of work that went into building it, putting it together. What I heard was it took a year to go there and fix it up because it had been abandoned for so long. So that was the first thing that impressed me about it. But also, you know, everybody's so friendly at these events, and I don't know. I mean, I don't think the weather really kept anyone away.
Is there something deeply different from mega events in USA?
I have not actually been to any mega events in the States, so I can't really answer that very well, but we had a great time today. It was really, really fun. It was great to meet all the German geocachers and other geocachers from around Europe.
Let me give the question to you, maybe.
I don't think that there's a big difference between mega events in the USA or here in Germany or in Europe. I think that when it comes to geocaching events in general, there are some real common themes. And so the people are, no matter where you go, I think if you find geocachers at a geocaching event, everybody's very friendly and welcoming. And it's one of those things where it doesn't really matter where you are, because the common theme of geocaching, you have everybody's nice. You know, it's really it's very similar, more so than dissimilar.
So I do think that like the differences are probably about the types of geocaches people go after. So in the United States, traditional caches are the most popular type of cache to go after, while there's a lot more multi-caches and puzzle caches in Europe and in Germany. So I see that difference. Also, we don't have a lot of tree climbing caches in the U.S., and I've heard quite a bit about tree climbing. Even 3 years ago when we were here last, we went on a ropes course.
It was the cache and climb event in 2007.
Yes.
Do you have the feeling that geocaching changed by getting more known in public?
I think there are a lot of issues that get brought up when people are aware of geocaching, and some people don't like people out there hiking and finding these boxes in the woods. So there's been a lot more education in the past, say, 3 years in the U.S. and overseas to explain to land managers that we're, you know, geocachers are normal people that just want to go outdoors and have a good time. Combining that technology with people are used to playing video games inside, and now they get to go outside and participate. So, so I think that's probably the biggest change. The more people, the more awareness. Which is good and bad. So the good side of it is that more people are aware of it, so they don't ask you strange questions. When you're out there looking for a cache, they pretty much know that you're out geocaching. You also have people in all sorts of jobs like law enforcement, search and rescue. You know, so having people from all over that understand it, it's a little bit easier to explain to a land manager that you want to place a cache.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I've got the impression that for you it must be important that geocaching is still growing and still grows. And but as you mentioned just now, there are some problems as well with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the, I would say it, illegal, but not, I mean, not in a strong way, the little tricky things geocachers do to hide their cache, to find mm-hmm. their cache, will come to public and will change the game, of course. How do you live with these both sides?
You accept that it'll happen and not try to deny that you have to deal with these problems. So I think some people may want to ignore it as a problem until it gets to be something you can't ignore, but I think we should remain open with geocaching and have, you know, instead of an underground activity where people don't know about what's going on and we don't have any information in geocaches that explain it, I think that's the wrong way to go. I think, you know, for us, it's not that that we want it to grow faster, is that we know it's going to grow faster, and we try to make sure it grows not too quickly. So we're not big on advertising, so we don't spend a lot of money on advertising. We use word of mouth to have interest. And by doing that, the slow growth allows us to help work with land managers and help that, you know, grow in a way that we think would be continue to be family friendly and fun for everybody. I think at this point, though, we have so many caches out there, it's really hard to tell what cache is a good cache and what cache is a bad cache. So I think one thing, our responsibility is to create tools so the community can judge whether these caches are good or not and encourage people to place better caches.
I would add something to that. I think that there are people out there that would say, oh, don't tell anybody about geocaching. You know, keep it small, just keep it for ourselves. And I think one of the things that we did when we first started the company is we said, you know, geocaching is fun, it's family friendly, it's a really positive activity, and we want to share it. We want to get people outside and have them enjoying nature and the outdoors and learning about the environment. And so we're not really interested in restricting the growth. We're more interested in allowing it to grow organically.
Yeah, we have a mission as a company to inspire outdoor play. So we all come from backgrounds of working too much and not going outside. And, you know, this is a way, because we're all people who like gadgets, to say, okay, well, I like playing Xbox or PlayStation, and I would love to be able to play Xbox outside, so how can I do that? And that's what geocaching feels to me, is a video game outdoors. So there's nothing wrong. I think you get to a point where we're playing video games 10 years from now and we're getting exercise, and we're actually, by playing more video games, we actually are more fit, which is the opposite of how it is today. So the more you're online playing World of Warcraft and other games, the less exercise you get. So that's where I'd like to see it going, and I hope geocaching is one of those things that does that, supports that.
What's the strategy of Groundspeak in this context? How do you think Groundspeak will earn money in future?
Well, I think we'll continue to sell premium memberships and try to provide features that geocachers who are a little more hardcore and would pay for. Travel bugs have always been a good business for us as a part of the experience. So if there are ways to create games on top of geocaching as game pieces within the activity, that's something that we'll continue to support. I think on the application side, creating better applications and then having additional features for premium memberships is something we'll continue to work on. And then with applications like Warigo, trying to find the next version of what Warigo can be so people can create multimedia experiences. So when you're out in the woods, you can interact with a virtual character or learn a story and that sort of thing. That still really interests us. So though right now we're focusing more on making sure the site doesn't crash. All the traffic that we're getting from all the people that are getting involved, just making sure that we can keep up with that. And that's what's been important for the last, the last 10 years. It's making sure we keep up with that. And I think we're getting to a point now where we can focus on other things other than making sure that the site is fast.
I don't want to sound unpolite, but if you mention Warigo, I have to say Warigo in Germany is more or less... Well, not good started. It started mm-hmm. not too good here.
Sure. Yes.
And one thing in my mind is that the applications were not really ready as they got on the market. Can you promise us more development in this direction?
Yes, can you?
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I guess what I can say is that we're committed to continuing development of location-based entertainment, and so if the path leads in the Warigo direction, that's the way we're going to go. But we're also working with, you know, as the new technology develops and as the new platforms come into play, we're really looking at the landscape and we're trying to see what can we deliver to the community that's going to be functional and that's going to be fun and, you know, ideally allow us to keep the business growing and support the company. And so, we're experimenting with some concepts that are based in Warigo. I'm not exactly sure what that's going to look like even 6 months from now, but we're actively considering that on a daily basis. And, you know, we're having conversations every week about Warigo and waymarking and some things that we can't even talk about yet, but but it's all directed in the interest of delivering good experiences to the community.
And really developing those tools so the community can build experiences for other participants. One of the challenges with Warrego was that we were putting it on a platform that doesn't get a lot of updates, so it wasn't like a Windows application or a Mac application where you could just hit a button and download the latest version. We had to work through another company to do that. And as a result, because it was such an early project, if we needed to do a new fix, it'd be really hard for us to get that fix out. Mm-hmm. So we found that, and at that time, the iPhone was not out yet, Android wasn't out yet, and when those started to appear, and then we didn't have to work with the carriers in the U.S., for example, we could just release whatever products we want. Then we decided, well, let's focus on geocaching first, and then let's try to build a platform that could work across many different devices. So if somebody were to create an experience, then that you know, Warrego cartridge or whatever that would be available for everybody to play, and not just somebody who has Garmin Colorado, you know. So so that's been a challenge, just even having the time to do that. So that's why we really haven't worked on it as much as we'd like. Warrego is something that we came up with in 2001. The goal was to try to find a way that would get people who like to find containers, physical containers in the woods, and turn that into a virtual experience so you don't have to worry about your cache missing, you know, but you still are excited when you find that final location. And it's really hard to replace the cache box. You know, when you find it, it's a eureka moment, and that's the exciting part of it. But then, you know, take that away, and what is the eureka moment you get when you play a Warrego cartridge? And a lot of times they're a geocache at the end of it. So,
when you, we all noticed that you integrated Facebook into geocaching.com, but a lot of geocachers around me wish to have more Facebook-like features on geocaching.com itself. So I call it the friend feature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As I came to geocaching.com, it was important for me. I looked, oh, friends were there. I know. And then I noticed that I can do nothing with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Will there come development?
We're struggling with whether or not we want to create a lot of Facebook features, because that takes a lot of development time to build, or if we want to just build on Facebook and then have those friend features. And I know a lot of people don't use Facebook. So I think right now we're just exploring the idea to see what the community thinks. And if they like that idea, then we'll move to more Facebook. Not Facebook features, but actually use Facebook as some of those features. If that isn't as interesting, then we'll have to think about how we're going to create friend-like features. Like, and we can still do this, where we could say, give me a pocket query that none of my friends have found, including me. So those kind of features we definitely have listed as a list of features that we could work on. What we're doing in our next release of our website is it's called Get Satisfaction, but there's a feedback link that'll be on the website. And you can click on that and then add a feature request. And other people can say whether they like that feature request, and then we can start ranking the things that the community really want. And we haven't really done that well in the past. Hopefully, if the friends functionality is the most important thing, then we'll try to work on that first.
It's not the only thing.
Yes, I know.
That's just an example, of course.
We have how many? 300 features in our list, and we have to prioritize those. And right now, we pick the priorities based on who posts in the forums, but I don't think that's good enough. So we're trying to make it so the community can then say, I think this is important, so I'm going to say that I want this. And then, you know, if 100 other people say the same thing, it pops up to the top, and then we work on that one. So we have no lack of features requested.
Even internally, you know, there's a lot of people who are thinking about geocaching as a business every day, and so internally, the developers and the testers and the community relations people and even the finance people are thinking, oh, why don't we do this with the website? And one of the things that I think we all recognize is historically we've been very successful by listening to the community. And so finding avenues like the Get Satisfaction application to allow the community to be better heard is one of the things that we think is very important. Because historically, we have the discussion forums, and you know, there's 3 million posts, if not almost 4 million posts in those discussions, and we don't have the time to actively read every thread that's in there. And so occasionally somebody will send an email, did you see this thread? And if we see it, you know, that's how we find out about the thing. So by putting a Get Satisfaction type of application in place, hopefully it will allow us to identify the things that the community wants. And at the end of the day, we're going to sit down and we're going to evaluate it and say, does this make sense for the community? Is this just 5 people that want it, or is it 500 people that want it? And, you know, what's the impact on the rest of the website if we deliver it? What's the financial impact to deliver it? What's the technical implications involved in delivering it? And the things that we can do to make the site better and give the community what they want is most likely what we're going to be working on.
For me, it seems to be clear. The community is your capital, of course, and you are in some way responsible for your capital and so for the community. And so it seems to me a fine way. Do you think that the way Groundspeak communicated to the community is perfect?
No. I mean, one thing is that by coming to Europe, the idea is that we get to meet geocachers outside of the United States and we get to hear what they need as opposed to what English speakers might need. So we're trying to do that more now, like localizing the website into multiple languages, and we ask the community to help us translate it so they can agree on certain terms that we don't know about. There's only so much we can do as a small company. We only have so much time in the day, and we do have, I don't know how many emails a day. How many emails do we get?
I mean, we have almost 1,000 emails a week coming in to community relations. And
new emails
per week.
Yeah,
and then it's an ongoing dialogue with, 30% of them. But I think, when it comes to communication, it's never going to be perfect because communication is a two-way street. And so not every person who's listening to the communication wants to hear it the same way. And so while we can please a lot of people in a certain way, there's also a lot of people that would prefer a different way. And so, we have to choose a means of communication, if not more than one, and just keep trying to do our best and listen to what people are asking for.
Often the little things, so that you tell us when geocaching.com is going down, we can.
And it's great.
We try to tell you now.
When we know it's coming down, we try now.
Of course.
And over the past 9.5 years, a lot of this has really been learning as we go. You know, we haven't, the three of us and the company in general, we haven't grown a business or a community to this size before. We've only made it from the beginning to this point. And so to know what's going to come tomorrow, we'll see it tomorrow and we'll have to respond. And so even the communication has changed. So now in response to what happened with the Fisher Plaza fire, when the whole website was down for a couple of days, Jeremy was one of the people who was down at Fisher Plaza, and he was posting on Twitter. And so all of a sudden what we learned from that is, well, not only do we want to have an active presence on Twitter to communicate, but we also need an alternative to communicate if the whole website goes down. And so if that were to happen again next time, our response would be better. And so, the best that we can do is to learn from the past and do our best going forward, and hopefully we come up with a good solution.
When you're looking forward, what partners do you see You had an arrangement with Garmin, I suppose. Or you're standing not far away from Garmin to keep it neutral.
We really try and remain device agnostic. So we want to support all of the manufacturers. So we work with Garmin and Magellan and Lowrance and Delorme, and then there are some other European manufacturers that see what Garmin and Magellan and Delorme and they'll contact us and they say, hey, we want to add some geocaching features to our device. How do we do that? We say, oh, here, look, we're happy to help you, because there's people out there that use those devices, and if that makes it easier for them to go geocaching, then it's worth our effort to assist the manufacturers.
Yeah, so if a new GPS company came to us and said, we want to provide a send a GPS feature on the website, we'd be more than willing to implement that. And we've done that with, you know, some of the major GPS manufacturers, because they see the value in creating features for geocachers. Some of the smaller companies and companies that have just become aware of geocaching, they just haven't given us the JavaScript or whatever we need in order to provide that feature for them.
And partners in the meaning of partners that help you grow.
There are a lot of websites around, like TB Run or TB Rescue, for instance. What do you think about?
So for TB Run and TB Rescue, they contacted us and they said, hey, here's what we're doing and this is what we want to build. And we said, you know, that sounds like a great idea. We really like it. How can we help you? And so we work with them to say, you know, oh, this is what you want to do with the data. Certainly we can allow you to do that. And then, you know, we do things like we run free banner advertisements on our website to let people know about TB Run and TB Rescue, because it's beneficial for everybody. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, so for the example on the travel bug pages, there was an issue where the first log on the page didn't have the distance on it, and they go onto this website and try to grab the distance so they could do the races. So I think that's going to be fixed. This one, or was the last time it was fixed? I don't know.
But we just fixed it. Okay. I hope we just fixed it. And if not, it's coming soon.
Yeah. but we basically added that in as the list of things we need to fix in order for that feature to happen. I think that anything that creates a better experience for geocachers, like new types of games, I love the idea of exploring those ideas. And really, when the challenge with geocaching is, I place a cache with a new idea. Is this idea going to be good for the community, or is it going to be bad for the community? One that turned out to be bad for the community, but something that we explored, was moving caches. And it turned out that, you know, because they move so much, that people would go to a location, try to find the cache, it wasn't there, and then they'd end up, you know, digging up the area trying to find it. So there's some things that sound good at the time but don't work out too well. And then there's some ideas that work out really well. I mean, travel bugs were actually started. I created the travel bug concept because I saw a lot of people creating message in a bottle, you know, ideas. They would have an email address and say, please move this on and email me. That will, it'd be easier to automate that a little bit and show maps and, you know, that sort of thing. So that's kind of how that happened. So we kind of, you know, we keep our ear to the ground. We see what the new things are going on, and then we have to make a judgment call at some point if it gets out of hand on some ideas, whether or not it should be a guideline or something that we just don't want to discourage.
And we actually get contacted almost every day by different people who have ideas around geocaching, and they say, oh, I have this idea, I really like to do this, you know, can you work with me? And for the most part, it's really a question of bandwidth. You know, we can't do everything. We just don't have the time. We don't have the resources to do it. And so we try and identify from all of the things that are coming in the best ones to work on. And because there are so many that are coming in, we don't even have the time to go out and contact companies and say, oh, we should really work with you, because everything's really coming inbound right now. And so that's a little bit challenging,
Generally we don't meet with a company, and our goal is to make sure that more people learn about geocaching. I don't think it's really necessary. I think enough people know about geocaching that it's growing on its own. I think it's more about what partners can help improve the geocaching experience. So whenever we meet with Garmin or Magellan or Lawrence or any of them, Delorum, it's more about, you know, here's some feedback on your GPS unit. This is how we think it would be better. Here's, you know, some new features, and then they request, you know, I want something else in the GPX file, so, you know, so we have this feature, you know, that sort of thing. So I think it's more about just having communication than it is about, like, a financial business interest between the companies.
Yeah, and, you know, along the same lines, we get approached by a lot of different companies asking to do promotions. Like, we had the Jeep geocaching promotion, which was a really big success, and the Unite for Diabetes promotion. And so one of the things that we all agree upon, and we've always agreed upon, is that we're not going to just serve advertising for the sake of advertising, and we're not going to allow anybody to just promote their product to the geocaching community. We feel like we have a duty to the community to only provide them with things that benefit the community. So if somebody comes to us and they say, hey, we want to do like a Jeep style promotion, but we want to sell home mortgages, we say, well, you know, that's not really related to geocaching, and so that's, you know, why is the community going to like that? Yeah, maybe you'll, as a mortgage provider, you'll get more business, but that's not, you know, it's not worth the effort for us to do it. But if somebody comes and they have an idea like the Garmin UK promotions, where they are introducing people to interesting geocaching locations throughout the United Kingdom, that, you know, that's the kind of promotion that we like to work on. And so, you know, it really comes down to it has to be geocaching related. The banner advertisements that we run on the website, it has to have some relation. It could be hiking boots, digital cameras, the things that geocachers appreciate. But if it's something like, you know, home security systems or you know, banking relationships, we're not, you won't see those things on the geocaching website.
In 2010, we are celebrating 10 years of geocaching and 10 years of Groundspeak. Maybe you can tell us something about the first days and weeks of the company.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you've heard the story, but basically I had started the geocaching website originally as a hobby. And so that was in September of 2000, and that's how we kind of look at our anniversary of geocaching. We didn't start the company until October.
We started talking in October, and then we actually we officially incorporated on November 3rd of 2000. So it was soon after you launched the geocaching website. We all kind of got together at the .com where we were working, and we said, you know, the New York Times picked it up and Slashdot picked it up, and it kind of crashed the site. And you said, hey, we might need a little bit more help with this. And so...
Well, the machine was in my bedroom. Okay. So, yeah. And didn't have a very good internet connection at the time. So we decided to get together and incorporate the business. Some of it was for risk, but also we needed to find ways to pay for the bandwidth that we were having to pay for in the equipment. And you know, one way to do that would be to sell T-shirts, which is how we started the company. So we worked with the company that we had a partnership with through Savvy Shopper, which was the company that we had worked together with, and they helped us print the first T-shirts that we then sold. There were 144 T-shirts. And we sold them and then ended up paying for the bandwidth, which helped pay for the machines. And then we continued to do this as a hobby for 2 years before, at that point, realized that it was a hobby that was taking more time than work, and wanted to figure out a way that we could do this full time so we didn't have to do both jobs. At that time, we decided to do the premium membership feature on the website. So we offered it as a charter membership. So we said, you know, anybody who creates a membership now will be a charter member. We have no features for you. Just sign up and and you'll get the same features as everyone else, except it'll say charter member. And in that month, we had enough memberships where we realized that there might be a point where we could all go full time, but it still took 5 years
to go full time. So we worked real jobs elsewhere, and then did geocaching in the nights and weekends. And then after, I think, 3 years, we were able to hire Jeremy full time, and then we brought Elias on full time. And then it was
a year after we started selling premium memberships that I went full time. So it was 3 years from the beginning, and then 5 years from the beginning for you, and then Elias started around the same time that I did. Yeah.
Coco and Heidi and now we're at about 45 full time employees and almost 200 volunteer reviewers and forum moderators. And so it's a pretty big team overall, and an even bigger community.
Yeah, we definitely couldn't do it without the reviewers. I think over the last 2 years in Germany specifically, the growth has been so fast that a lot of new reviewers have started, and they're just an immense help to making sure geocaching is family friendly, and that we have a certain, you know, level of guidelines that are accepted. So ultimately that helps us with land managers. If, you know, regulation becomes an issue, and it sounds like it is becoming more of an issue these days, that it's a lot easier to work with land managers if they know that they have somebody they can contact, you know, who speaks the language and understands the culture in the area. So having those reviewers that are regional and a lot of times they're part of organizations that understand the issues and the politics of the area, it's much easier than us, because we just be completely ignorant and say the wrong things, so it helps quite a bit. And then we try to keep it fun for reviewers, but it's kind of hard to do that. Yes, because everybody has their way of playing the game, and we want to make sure that people really enjoy it, but you know, there's sometimes where you just have to say no to a cash placement or whatever reason.
It's of course for me the logical question is often, but how do you see geocaching in, let's say, 10 years?
We'll all be driving hover cars and and finding caches with their minds. Yeah, I think it's just going to get easier and easier to find, to use your GPS, you know, indoors, outside. They're just going to get better and better. People are going to be able to connect to the website wherever they are, so it'll be a lot easier to go geocaching spontaneously. We see this with the iPhone, that now you can just say, I want to go geocaching. Are there any caches near me? With a lot of these applications now running full time, then you could be walking down the street and your phone will buzz and say, there's a geocache nearby you haven't found, and you know, you stop working and you go and you find the cache. So that, I think you'll be able to interact with more people in real time while you're geocaching. I think there'll be a lot more multimedia, so video games that you'll be playing outdoors. I definitely think that, you know, if you're playing D&D 10 years ago, then you get pretty out of shape. But I think that you might, you know, look like a warrior when you're playing a game like that because of all the exercise you'll be getting. So I see a lot of the, you know, like the Wii, PlayStation, Xbox, they're all using a lot of activity based games. So what is it, Kinects from Xbox, and then the PlayStation Move, then Wii Fit, and all those things. So you're already seeing people in front of their TVs exercising, but then they're just going to move that outside. So in the 10 years, you'll see more you know, video games that people are playing in the real world. And I think that's going to be the, I always think it's like a pendulum swinging back from being indoors and watching home entertainment to going outside. And hopefully that'll bring more money to parks and outdoor areas, and there'll be more human interaction instead of through a computer. So,
and you will be sitting drinking piña colada on a Caribbean island.
We'll be attending geocaching events in Germany.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.